If you are watching this on YouTube or listening to this podcast, wherever you are today, please hit that subscribe button, that follow button, so that you can stay current on the material that we are providing. But not only that, you then help us to spread the word to more people. You are vital in this mission to reaching our world of people just like you who are living in this nightmare. Welcome to the Covert Narcissism Podcast. I'm your host, Renee Swanson. Welcome back to the Covert Narcissism Podcast, and thrilled to have everybody here. That welcome back is to my audience out there, but it is also to Eleanor Marks. Eleanor, she is here to stay, going to be sticking around and joining me in this journey with CNG, and I am thrilled to have her on board. So Eleanor, welcome back.
Thank you. Happy Sunday, everybody.
So Eleanor is, I'll just kind of throw this out there right now. Eleanor is running a book club that's coming up. You should be hearing the ad with the podcast. She's done some of these book clubs for us before with the CNG. So Eleanor, thank you, by the way, for doing that with this group.
It's always exciting to hear other people's stories, opinions of the same book that when we all read it together. And it's a great book that we're doing this time. The Highly Sensitive Person's Guide to Toxic People.
It is a great book. Yes. Tahita Arabi, I think is how you say her name. I'm not sure. Do you know for sure?
That's how I pronounce it as well.
Okay. Well, we are diving into the Q&A that we did in the Facebook group. Eleanor also helps me out a lot with the Facebook group, and I'm very grateful for that. And we put a Q&A out there, so we're diving into some questions from that, and we're going to split this into two parts today. The first question is in dealing with the golden child, and her question is, how do we help them unlearn concerning narcissistic traits without disparaging the other parent? So we're just going to start there. Eleanor, what are your thoughts on the golden child?
Another tough question. These are all great questions. Yeah. And especially sprinkling in the part of not disparaging the other parent, because the easiest thing would be just to rip apart. And but we don't want to be doing that. I will just share some of the techniques that I use. I use other people's situations and dissect them with my kids. Much easier to talk about other people that's not their father. But yet we're still kind of looking at poor behavior and how it works. I take TV shows and movies when I'm watching them with my kids. If there's anybody out there watching Outer Banks right now, Sarah's dad, Ward Cameron, is an amazing example of somebody who's very narcissistic. And I take that, you know, with my son who's watching it. I'm like, whoop, what did you think of that? And, you know, it's hard to believe that there really are people like that in the world who do that. And right. Never said once a thing about his father or anything like that, but we dive into the topic. I take when my friends tell me situations that happen with their kids, I kind of like bring it back to my kids, no names attached, but like, what do you think of that? How would you feel if somebody did that to you? What would you do if you could redo it? And we just start kind of spitballing a lot of scenarios of good behavior, bad behavior, without naming necessarily any names. And those conversations go a heck of a lot better than, hey, I heard your father did this or mother did this, or we're still talking about it, but we're not exactly talking about it.
It is easier to see what's going on in someone else's world than it is in our own. And this is true of children as well. And so I do agree with that, that it's an easier way to talk about it if we can talk about it in relation to what we're seeing in the other people around us. I will add to that, though, that narcissistic traits that show up in our kids, whether they're the golden child or the scapegoat or some combination of the two, and we'll talk about that. Narcissistic traits that show up in our kids can show up even if there's not a narcissistic parent in the home. And So I do think we need to remember that just because we're seeing narcissistic traits in a child does not necessarily come from the narcissistic parent that's in that home. And so in regards to talking to our child about their behavior, it does not need to be centered around this other parent, you know? And in fact, I would encourage it not to be. Their world on the inside, if they're being raised under a narcissistic parent, their internal mindset is already focused around that parent. Like we all know that if there's a narcissistic person in a home, that everybody's mental capacity is filled with this person. And so I would encourage us to kind of take that element out of our relationship with that child, so that my child, my relationship with my kid is about me and that kid. It's not about me and that kid and the narcissistic parent. You know, that's the triangulation that gets fed. And I really encourage parents out there to make my relationship with my kid be about me and that kid.
Yeah. You also need to pause of kids, toddlers, teenagers, right? That they are narcissistic. That's one of they are learning and thinking that the world kind of revolves around them. But it's very different when it's in an adult person, and we need to like have kids be able to be kids and not automatically assume like they're doing this because of their other parent, and not attaching it that they're just like them. They are kids or teenagers.
I completely agree. And in fact, one of the best things that my therapist ever said to me was, it is not that your kids are acting like their father. It's that the father is acting like his kids.
Yes.
And it was so eye-opening to me that the behavior that was happening to my kids, this is normal development. This is, children do go through a normal narcissistic phases, multiple phases of development, times when the world is centered around them, times when they really truly don't understand the feelings of others around them. They don't understand how their actions are affecting the people around them. These are lessons that they have to learn, and ideally they do, and they grow past this. But when you have a 40-year-old plus grown adult that is behaving this way, they don't understand how their actions are affecting the people around them. They have, you know, they're also self-focused and self-centered and all these things that narcissistic people are. That's the problem. Not that a 4-year-old or a 14-year-old is behaving that way. Yes, you teach them. Yes, you guide them. Yes, you help them nurture this. But the problem is the 40-year-olds or 50-year-olds or whatever age, but the full-grown adults who are behaving that way.
It's all very triggering behavior when you see it too. And as survivors of this, right, we've always had to look 100 steps ahead for so many things. And when we see our children kind of behave like this, we go 100 steps ahead of like, we already like, you know, attach that they're narcissistic and the huge problem that comes with it. We got to kind of reel it in a bit. And the line about that your child is acting like a child, it's your ex that might be acting like a child, runs through my head way too often, but it has me pause when my child does something that's triggering, little jarring, you know, right? All the hairs on the back of your neck stand up of like, I know where that came from. And reeling it in a notch, reeling it in. I think too, part of Amanda's question of, her line, helping them unlearn concerning behaviors. Sometimes when it happens is when we want to talk about it, but feelings at that moment are a little raw and crispy, and maybe just waiting a day, give 24 hours from when it actually occurs to talking about it. You'll be able to choose your words better. Everybody's on a little bit less confrontational plane, because I mean, we all know the triggering can drive you crazy and you're off to the races and you've said things that really have nothing to kind of do with that moment, but save it for another time.
Yeah. What I hear you saying, and I absolutely agree, is to be the positive role model that child needs. And as the adult, that I am the one who can step back and go, okay, no, we are in that moment of reaction or defensiveness or hypersensitivity, and we've got to step back from that. Your child's not necessarily going to be able to do that. And you've got to be the one to be able to make that space. I would add to that, to the one of the things we need to do is be able to set healthy boundaries with our child. Part of the reason why we all ended up in these narcissistic relationships is because we didn't know how to set boundaries, you know, healthy boundaries. And now we need to do that with our children. And those boundaries are, you know, not defending myself. Boundaries are for me. They're not for, you know, the other person. They're for me. And so if my child comes out and is attacking in a way that we know where they learned it, me defending myself just feeds that. But I have nothing to defend. I have nothing to defend to my child. I'm going to let my character speak for itself. And the more I can get a hold of that and set that boundary for me, that I will not defend myself, I will not internalize their words, then the less triggering it is. And I'm able to exhibit healthy boundary setting for a child who needs to also learn how to set healthy boundaries.
Yeah. Yeah. I had heard once, you know, you need to do something like 30 plus times before it becomes habit. And, you know, so knocking out these situations with your child, like once, twice, three, four, five times, and wondering like, why isn't it getting any better? It is a constant, keep doing, repeat, repeat, repeat again, and repeat all of that. And just keep showing them that, you know, just showing up as the healthy parent, calmly, collectively, and having conversations with them, revisiting conversations. It's the process. It doesn't happen in one fell swoop.
No,
by any means.
No, and I will add to that, give yourself space to have those moments where you do get reactive or defensive. You're human. And it's going to happen. You're going to get triggered. Don't judge yourself for that. Don't shame yourself for that. That's not what we want to be as the role model for our kids. You know, it is okay. And one of the most powerful conversations I ever had with my son while he was kind of going through some of this, and he was 13 or 14, right in that age range, is I went into him and I just got completely raw and vulnerable. And I just said to him, I don't have the answers. I don't know how to fix this. And I'm hurting, and I'm empty. And that rawness with him still in his mind, he's 23 years old today, it still stands out to him as a conversation that truly changed our relationship, because I quit trying to be the fixer of everything. I quit trying to be the one to have all the answers or to be the perfect, whatever perfect is. That image of perfect is part of what causes so much damage within the home. And it really turned our relationship around with each other.
I've seen that. I've definitely seen that. Something else I wanted to add in is, like, when we get to these moments that are more confrontational with our child, or just harder conversations to have, to not forget about the times when times are good, and to use that as a check-in point with them, because you don't want them to think they're like, oh, here we go again, because something negative has occurred. Once a week or whenever, you know, just, it's hard for kids to speak up sometimes. They don't want to be the one to bring up topics. But if you ask them, how are we doing today? They're most likely more readily going to talk about what they have, because you've now opened up the door, or whatever it might be, to have these conversations. And you know, 9 times out of 10, you'll probably get like, nothing, it's all good, fine. but you're doing it, right? Because that 10th time's going to come around, and they're going to be like, I was wondering about this. I do want to know about this. And I also want to add in, for anybody out there with teenagers, right, that they are a tough group to try to talk about anything, even fun things in life. But I actually was given this advice that the teenagers don't like to talk face to face. I mean, like, the, you know, eyeball to eyeball. And I have some of the most beautiful conversations with my son in the car driving, when we're both looking forward and nobody has to look at each other, and you can just talk, and you're not self-conscious about anything. And even a better bonus, at night going and getting ice cream. I've had that is like our key time to talk about things. And I've eaten a lot of ice cream in these last couple of years. But it is fertile ground for good conversation with teenagers.
I think that's an awesome idea. And I would add to that other activities. Right now, my boys and I, a whole lot of our conversations are over a pool table. And we can shoot pool. You've got distractions going on where we're not having to sit, like you're saying, eyeball to eyeball, and have these conversations that are hard to have. It's like you create this safe space for it. You know, my dad did that with me, and where those conversations happened were on the ski slopes. And I remember well being on the ski slopes, and we would talk on the lift on the way up, but I knew that conversation was limited because I knew we were going to have to get off that ski lift. And so it was safe. I could talk and I could even say things, but then I could get off and go ski, and we weren't going to talk while we were skiing down the mountain. And so it created this kind of unique dynamic for my dad and I, where I felt safe to talk because I didn't feel trapped.
Avoiding that, let's sit on the couch and talk and nothing else. That already puts everybody on edge and under a microscope. So
that in my home, when my husband wanted to have a conversation with the kids, it was everything had to stop. You weren't allowed to twitch with anything in your hands. It was like somebody had just put the fanfare out. Now we are having a conversation. And that, as a kid, I can imagine being totally terrifying. You know, the thought of sitting and having to have a face-to-face conversation, like you say, where everybody's under the microscope for 15 minutes even, but these things went on for 2 and 3 hours, that's terrifying. And that will shut anybody down, especially a teenager. So her question goes on to say, how to maintain a relationship with said child, the golden child, when also trying to protect myself and heal from narcissistic abuse and the trauma that you've been through. And we've kind of touched on that a little bit already, because the child, the things they do that mimic the parent are going to be triggering. They're going to be hard, you know, that's going to be hard to deal with. And you've got to give yourself grace on that. You've got to give yourself forgiveness, you know, no self-judgment. The triggers are understandable, but get on your own path of healing 100%. You know, I know it's easy to get focused on our kids, and I don't have time for me. I went through that. I don't have time for me. I have to focus on my kids. But the time that I do spend on my own healing is like one of the best things I can do for my kids, because it lets me be less reactionary, less defensive, less sensitive, less triggering, because I'm healing. And that is one of the best gifts I can offer to them. And then in so being, I'm giving them emotional safety. They're going to make mistakes. They're going to hurt. Yeah. Kids that are acting out like this, they need connection far more than they need correction. And in that process of connection is giving them emotional safety.
Yeah. Someone posted on Facebook earlier this week or last week of, I'm paraphrasing here, that no one ever talks about what it's like to parent while your heart is also breaking at the same time and trying to piece yourself back together again. And I screenshotted that's in my little look at often days. This is a part of that where the superpowers in you have to come forward and turning the difference is that we always want to be there for our child, but we need to be there for ourselves as well. And you're a better parent when you do take care of yourself. And especially when there's fires all around you of what's going on. And if you're in the thick part of divorce or newly separated, it is a juggling act beyond belief of keeping it all together. And parenting, no one ever said parenting was easy in a healthy relationship with a healthy partner. And so now we've just escalated everything on trying to be there for our child, yet piece ourselves back together.
It is not an easy journey by any stretch. I think the hardest thing I've ever done in my life is parent. And when you add to that, that you are parenting against your partner, okay, let's own it. We are co-parenting. We are counter-parenting because we're constantly trying to undo the damage that's being done. But it is easy to overcompensate, which is not healthy. Instead, find inside you, find that realness, that space to be human, that space to be, you know, I'm not perfect, and let your kids see that, because you've got to give them permission to be human as well. And in so doing, you're helping them to find that space for themselves, giving themselves permission to be human.
In the spirit of mental health awareness as well, I always made it a point to not tell my kids what I was always doing for myself, but I wasn't, you know, hey, I have a 2-hour meeting and I'm going to go take it at another place. So they knew I was going to a support group or something else to help myself. I didn't say I'm going to the grocery store or anything, and so that they could see those points that I was doing this and this and this and this. Even if they didn't ask questions, they knew it was something for me. And I think that that really helps them. So when they need it, they can say, well, this is what they're doing. We don't have to hide under that shame veil of I'm going to a therapy appointment and passing it off as you're shopping for shoes or something along those lines. But you're right, our kids are going to copy us, or we want them to, in these aspects of being proud of what they're doing, of not being ashamed that, yeah, I need help in these situations and I'm going to be going to do this, and being vocal about it.
I completely agree. And I guess I want to close out with saying that with my kids, when I saw times where my son, you know, either one of them was behaving like their father, of course, it just sends off all the red flags and all the alarm bells and all the, you know, the fight or flight, all of it came crashing back. And I remember saying to my son at one point, because he saw it and he's like, I'm just like my dad. He saw it. And then he really judged himself hard. And so some of the self-hatred really got birthed in him because he saw, you know, his dad's behaviors inside himself. And I remember saying to him one time that, okay, you might have some of your dad in you, but you've got some of me too. Don't ever forget that. Why do your dad's words ring more true than mine? These are not things I taught you. These are not things I've said about you. And his words were, Mom, the negative words have more energy. They have more weight than the positive words. And I've thought about that a lot. And now my kids are older. We fast forward in time. And I just want to say this, that the negative words, I do think they ring more true at the moment, at the time. But I think the positive words have more long-lasting. The positive words can outweigh them over time as they go because they've got more depth in them. They've got more realness and more genuineness in them. So I encourage everyone out there listening, while you may feel like you are fighting the worst uphill battle in the world, you are trying to, you know, stop a steam engine, don't give up on the power of the positive words, the genuine words, not overcompensating, not cheerleader. I think you're great and wonderful when all they did was, you know, take out the trash. But instead, the realness, the shooting the pool with them and connecting with them over, you know, coffee or over ice cream, like you said, that real genuine time with them is incredibly powerful. And just rinse and repeat, keep repeating and keep showing up for your kids.
When you were saying that, I was thinking that, like, it doesn't need to be a whole day, a whole afternoon. It can be one game of pool. It can be that one drive. And like, I don't know, as adults, we think, well, you know, we got to go out, we got to have dinner and do this and do that afterwards. And, you know, a whole evening. And it's small moments throughout the day that make a bigger impact than I think we realize with kids that age. They are not adults. They are not in for the long theater and long dinner. They want quick, and you're with them, and they know they love you.
They want small doses.
Small doses.
They get the small doses of medicine. Yes. Kid-sized doses. So
yes.
But
yes.
Eleanor, thank you so much for being here today. I will say this. We are going to dive into this, you know, another part of, was it her question? It was a different person's question.
Amanda's question.
That was dealing with an attorney. And we're going to dive into that a little deeper in the next time we are together. Eleanor, you have far more experience with the legal side and the attorney side than I do. And I'm sorry to hear that. I hate that for you. But you do. Let's just face it. You do. And so I want everyone out there to know that is coming, that you are a high conflict divorce coach, you know, with a focus on covert narcissism. And so how can people find you if they are in that situation and go, hey, I need to talk now?
Yeah. I have a website. Hopefully it's an easy website to remember. It's just myname.net, Eleanor Marks, Eleanor Marks.net. And you can send an email straight through there. I try to turn around emails as quickly as I can, because I know if you're coming to my website, you're probably not in a really positive place at that point and are needing some pretty quick information. So I definitely keep that in the forefront.
Okay. Thank you for sharing that. And if anybody does have trouble finding her, please reach out to me. I am happy to share the contact information and to help you, to get in touch with Eleanor. So don't delay on that and do reach out. So everyone out there, thank you so much for listening in today. Eleanor, thank you again for being here with us.
Thank you. See you next time.
See you next time. And I wish everyone out there so much peace on your journey of healing.
You have been listening to the Covert Narcissism Podcast with your host, Renee Swanson. Be sure to check out our website at www.covertnarcissism.com. There you will find many resources just for you to help you on this journey. You can also reach out to me by email at Renee, R-E-N-E-E, at cnglifecoaching.com. Those letters are CNG, as in Covert Narcissism Group. I do look forward to hearing from you. I wish you so much peace on your journey of healing.
The information provided by Renee Swanson and the Covert Narcissism Podcast is for educational purposes only and is not to be used for diagnosis purposes and not intended to be a substitute for clinical care. Please consult a healthcare provider for guidance specific to your case. This material discusses narcissism in general. It does not claim that any specific person has narcissism and should not be used to refer to any specific person as having narcissism. Permission is not granted to link to or repost this material to support an allegation or a claim that any specific person is a narcissist. That would be an unauthorized misuse of the material and information provided.